Good morning to each of you. It is good to be here. I do enjoy and appreciate these times of worshiping together here at Calvary and appreciate the congregation here. In my previous message from Nehemiah chapter 1, we were challenged, I believe, by the example of Nehemiah. Challenged to do what? Stand in the gap, he says. That's a phrase that comes from another book. I forget which. Ezekiel. Anyway, what did Nehemiah do that was a challenge to us? How did we come across that time? Fast and pray. And I hope that has continued to ring a bell with you in your own personal life, in your devotional life, to be in prayer for our congregation, for what God is doing and wants you to be involved in, and to give himself to that. For how long did Nehemiah fast and pray? For 4 months. Thank you. We get that by knowing a bit of the Hebrew calendar and observing the time dates that were stamped in chapter 1 and then at the beginning of chapter 2. We're in chapter 2 today. Looking back a bit more into the background historically of where Nehemiah lived and where he was, let me just identify a bit of that. The Jewish people had been taken captive by first the Assyrians, the northern kingdom, and then Judah and Jerusalem were also taken captive, and Jerusalem was destroyed, and they were in captivity to the Babylonians for 70 years. At the end of the Babylonian Empire, a new king and the Persian Empire came into control, and Cyrus, the king, permitted the Jewish people, you may return to your homeland if you wish. What a change of posture and a change of policy to allow the Jews to return to Jerusalem and to Judea. And this was in 536 BC that Cyrus permitted them to go. And so a lot of them went under the leadership of Shealtiel and Zerubbabel. They went and they worked hard. And one of the first things they wanted to do as a group was to rebuild the temple at Jerusalem. Now that was delayed by opposition from without and by lack of motivation from within, but they did eventually get it done, and the temple was dedicated 20 years later, and it was a time of celebration, yes, and a time of also restoring the worship of God at Jerusalem. What a milestone. Well, time went on, and about 53 years after that dedication is when the story of Esther took place over in Persia, or in Susa, the palace of the Persian king. Time continued to move on, and 15 years later after the Esther story is when Ezra returned to Jerusalem. So we're talking about giant leaps forward time-wise in the history of the people of Israel. Ezra returned. In his book, his first half tells about rebuilding the temple before he got there. His second half tells about what happened when he got there, and this was at the time that Artaxerxes was the king in Persia, and Ezra returned as a religious leader and to restore the worship and the faithful commitment to God. Well, then it was another 13 years till the story of Nehemiah. That's where we are today, again, with the story of Nehemiah in chapter 2. Nehemiah was serving the king Artaxerxes as his cupbearer. Now, Artaxerxes was the son of Ahasuerus, who was also called Xerxes, but Ahasuerus was Esther's king. So it's interesting to note that Nehemiah is serving a king who is the stepson of Esther. She was his stepmother. And so she was probably still living, virgin and young as she was when she was taken in to be his queen, and he being older and having now died, she likely could still have been living at this time. Without a doubt, she had had a great influence in the Persian kingdom regarding the Jewish people and their situation. And that could explain something of what happened here in today's story with Nehemiah coming to the king with his request. And one other detail, in our story today, the king is going to give an order to Nehemiah, go back and rebuild Jerusalem. Not the temple, that's already been rebuilt, but the walls around Jerusalem, the city. And that order is the one that Daniel refers to in his prophecy. We're at the beginning of the 70 weeks of Daniel. The order to rebuild Jerusalem is here in chapter 2. So you, for you prophecy buffs and history buffs, that's how this story fits together. This is the story of Nehemiah in chapter 2. So we're picking up with Nehemiah after his 4 months of fasting and praying for his concern about Jerusalem. He had heard that the city was in shambles, and it had been. During the time of rebuilding the temple, Ezra 1-6, they must have started to rebuild the walls and then were stopped. And then the walls were ruined, and whatever gates there were was destroyed by fire. Yes, again, Nebuchadnezzar had done it years before. Now they had started to rebuild, and it was in shambles again, and Nehemiah heard about this, and he's so heavy about it, and he's burdened for his home city, Jerusalem, not as if he had ever lived there himself, but it was the home of his ancestors, and he was concerned about that. Nehemiah chapter 2. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had not been sad in his presence. And the king said to me, "Why is your face sad, seeing you are not sick? This is nothing but sadness of the heart." Then I was very much afraid. I said to the king, "Let the king live forever. Why should not my face be sad when the city, the place of my father's graves, lies in ruins, and its gates have been destroyed by fire?" Then the king said to me, "What are you requesting?" So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king, "If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's graves, that I may rebuild it." And the king said to me, the queen sitting beside him, "How long will you be gone? When will you return?" So it pleased the king to send me when I had given him a time. And I said to the king, "If it pleases the king, let letters be given to the governors of the province beyond the river, that they may let me pass through till I come to Judah, and a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress of the temple, and for the wall of the city, and for the house that I shall occupy." And the king granted me what I asked, for the good hand of my God was upon me. Then I came to the governors of the province beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent with me officers of the army and horsemen, but when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite servant heard this, it displeased them greatly that someone had come to seek the welfare of the people of Israel. So I went to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. Then I arose in the night, I and a few men with me, and I told no one what my God had put into my heart to do for Jerusalem. There was no animal with me but the one on which I rode. I went out by night by the valley gate to the dragon spring and to the dung gate. I inspected the walls of Jerusalem that were broken down and its gates that had been destroyed by fire. Then I went on to the fountain gate and to the king's pool, but there was no room for the animal that was under me to pass. Then I went up in the night by the valley and inspected the wall. And I returned back and entered by the valley gate and so returned. And the officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing. And yet I had not told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, and the rest who were to do the work. Then I said to them, "You see the trouble we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gates burned. Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer suffer derision." And I told them of the hand of my God that had been upon me for good, and also of the words that the king had spoken to me. And they said, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for the good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite servant and Geshem the Arab heard of it, they jeered at us and despised us and said, what is this thing you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king? Then I replied to them, the God of heaven will make us prosper, and we, his servants, will arise and build, but you have no portion or right or claim in Jerusalem. Interesting. Let me explain some of the things in this story. Nehemiah begins or carries on with his burden and concern for Jerusalem and the walls and that had been rebuilt, but now were broken down. And some 70 years later, they're still broken down. Whatever Jews have been living there in the city of Jerusalem and in Judea, that's okay with them. I mean, they're not doing anything about it. They're not making attempt or effort to do anything about rebuilding their walls anymore. He had begun by fasting and praying, and now 4 months later, we pick up here with his story in chapter 2. During those 4 months, during those times on his knees before the Lord, God has been doing a work in Nehemiah's heart. God has been doing, shaping, sharpening, giving him a vision for it, for what he could do and what could be done at Jerusalem. Nehemiah now has occasion to carry forth his job again with the king. He brings wine to his king. This is a trusted position. It's maximum security, if you please, to be sure the king is not poisoned, someone to be sure that things are safe for the king. But one of the requirements was all the king's servants, if they have personal issues or personal problems, it's never to show. They've got to keep that to themselves. They're always supposed to show a pleasant disposition, a cheerful disposition before the king. But on this day, it showed. The heaviness in his heart was showing on his face. And Nehemiah, it showed on his face that he was sad. And the king noticed it. It's no wonder that Nehemiah was very much afraid when the king said, why are you sad? But he took the occasion to speak of what his concerns were. You notice, perhaps, that Nehemiah does not use the word Jerusalem when he talks about the city of my fathers, where my father's graves are. Jerusalem was a despised city, a city that was pegged as rebellious, the city of the Jews. It did not have a good reputation. He just calls it the city where my fathers are buried. And the king says, what are you requesting? Well, here's an opportunity. On the spot, very much afraid, Nehemiah gives from his heart a prayer to the Lord, silent prayer. God help! But with his mouth, he is answering the king. Two things simultaneously. A prayer to God and a response to the king. If it pleases you, O king, if I found favor in your sight, let me go to Judah, the city of my father's graves, that I may rebuild it. That's his desire. That is the vision God has implanted in his heart. That is his request of the king. I don't know why it says that the queen was sitting here. That was not Esther. But I imagine the queen sitting there was saying, yeah, do it. Come on, let's let him do it. He's a good man, you know. I don't know what she was saying. But the queen was sitting there. And in the presence of both of them, Nehemiah is making this request. Well, the king says, how long you want to be gone? And when will you return? And it pleased the king to send me. The king was pleased. The king was happy to cooperate with the vision and the dream and the desire and the request of Nehemiah and send him and gave orders for Nehemiah to go. He must have made Nehemiah to become the governor of the province and sent him with authorization to that effect. He sent official letters to the governors beyond the river. Now, for Persia, Iran, beyond the river means as you're going west, you get to the Euphrates and then the provinces beyond the river over there where Syria, Judea, Samaria, and so on are. That's the area beyond the river. And he got letters for those governors to let him pass through, to the keeper of the forest, to give him timber, and to build his own house. So he's going to expect to build a house and stay there for a while. And as the story goes on, we find that he did stay there for a good while. Because the gracious hand of my God was upon me, the king granted my requests. In this moment, Nehemiah saw the answers to prayer coming to shape up. He saw that God has been working. God has been preparing. God prepared the king, gave Nehemiah the opportunity, gave Nehemiah the right words. God inclined the heart of the king to be favorable. God's gracious hand was upon me. So Nehemiah got himself ready. He didn't do it the next morning, I'm sure. There are things to prepare and get ready. Got these letters written, got them in hand. The army officials, army officers, and horsemen as well. This was an armed escort that Nehemiah took back to Jerusalem. And it wasn't just to the next county over. He's going 2,000 miles to Jerusalem. That's like going from here to Salt Lake City. You ever do that on a road trip? There's no overnight flight for Nehemiah to go over there. There's no train to ride, no car to ride, probably camels and horses, whatever. It's a journey, a tremendous big journey to take. And Nehemiah prepares to go. And when he gets there, we read what he does when he's there. Sanballat is already mentioned here. He becomes Nehemiah's political thorn in the side. He's a political enemy of Nehemiah and the project going forward throughout the book. And he's probably from a couple cities up north of Jerusalem there. Horon, he's called a Horonite. Tobiah is another one. Tobiah has connections with the Jewish people. Tobiah is married to a Jewess, and he's close to Elisha, the priest, but he and Sanballat both are very much disturbed that someone is coming to help the Jews. Not sure at what point they learned the exact nature of Nehemiah's mission, but there he is. But 3 days later, Nehemiah makes the personal inspection of the walls. He had heard about it 4 months ago, more than that. He had heard about it when he was over there in Persia, and now he wants to see it himself, and he does. And he sees the damage that the walls are in. I suppose he found just rubble, weeds growing up, shambles there. The gates were torn down. There's nothing really of a wall around the city. And it says that no one knew what God had put in my heart. And there is a secret that God has been working in his heart. And the vision Nehemiah is carrying and his concern and burden for Jerusalem and the plan he has come not of his own thinking, but it has come from God in that time he spent in prayer. Then Nehemiah called the people together. He said, "Now I want to talk to you." He shared the plan and he lays it right out. We're in trouble. He didn't beat around the bush. He acknowledged what it was, but it wasn't a hopeless message he gave them. It was a hopeful one. We're in disgrace. We're in trouble. The wall is in shambles. Come, let's rebuild. And here's why. The gracious hand of God has been upon me. And he started rehearsing to them what he had seen of God preparing the way, preparing his heart, preparing the way for him to come to Jerusalem, preparing the king's favor and blessing and permission on his behalf. And God's just been alive and at work. And he encourages them, and this account of God working in them encourages and builds them up, and they agreed, yes, let's do it. And they strengthened their hands or prepared to get into it for a good work. And so the account of God's hand at work was inspiring and encouraging to the people. But there's opposition. Sanballat and Tobiah, They started ridiculing and jeering, and it didn't stop with chapter 2. But Nehemiah's response was strong and steady, because he knew that God was in it. He knew that God was in his heart, giving him this plan and vision. He simply said, the God of heaven is going to give us success. We are his servants. We'll do the work. You don't have to bother with it. It's none of your business. And it really wasn't. The title I'm using for the message today, The Good Hand of God. I noticed that about 2 years ago here at Calvary. And I found it in the book of Ezra. It is actually there 6 times in the last chapters of Ezra. And it's here in this chapter twice. A phrase that's very similar to this. The hand of God was upon me for good. Or the good hand of God was upon me. I was so excited and thrilled at what God was doing at Calvary these last three years. I was pleased to know that God was here and he was moving people and he was pulling us together to restructure the church organization and leadership and so on, but also to rebuild and renew this building and this room and then the outside and the roof as well. And you may remember hearing me talk about the gracious hand of God upon us. Well, here we are again, and this time it's in Nehemiah. In this chapter, there are 5 clues as to why Nehemiah's work was successful. And it's not Nehemiah's skill. It's not his great leadership ability and his vision, his charisma. It's not that he had well-designed plans and program that he had come up with. It's not Nehemiah at all. The 5 clues in this chapter are the 5 times that God is mentioned. God is the key and the clue for why Nehemiah's project and work was successful. We're going to notice those 5 times. They're spaced out pretty evenly throughout the chapter, about every 4 verses, with one exception. Verse 4. So I prayed to the God of heaven. Nehemiah was in trouble. Here he is, sad before the king. Nehemiah was in trouble. In chapter 1, Hosea's prayers were quiet, when his quiet time at his prayer closet at home or wherever he was, kneeling in prayer. But here he was, a whole different situation. He's on the job. He's in front of the king. The king is asking him a question, and he's got to answer. And the king has caught him red-handed with a sad face. He shot a prayer to God, just spontaneous, spur of the moment, instantaneous, from his heart. He didn't speak it, because with his mouth, he's got to speak to the king. But he does 2 things at once. It's multitasking, isn't it? Praying to God and doing your work. Praying to God and answering the king. And so Nehemiah did this, and he knew that God, the one who he'd been bowing before all this time, will also hear his prayer while he's on the job and on the go. And his prayer is basically, help. It's sort of like a little child holding his hands up. Pick me up, help me. You know, with our hands up to God, they're empty, aren't they? But we're needing help, and we're reaching, and we're wanting the one above to lift us and hold us in his hands. Prayer had put Nehemiah into the safe hands of God, spiritually. Nehemiah was at God's disposal. Nehemiah was submitting and humble before the Lord, and his prayer time had brought him to a place of recognizing his own need of God. And here in this moment of need, before the king, he utters that help me prayer again. And so I prayed to the God of heaven. Come down to verse 8. The good hand of my God was upon me. As Nehemiah's king was responding to him, asking, what do you want? How long will it take? How can I help? What can we do to facilitate this? And Nehemiah is telling him thing after thing that, yeah, I need this and I need that, and I also need letters of permission and so on. the king is just cooperating right along with it. And Nehemiah suddenly realizes, this is God. I didn't do this. God prepared the way. God is the one who sent Esther a generation ago to incline the king to be favorably impressed toward the Jews. Now his son is king, my king, and he's also listening to my request. God has prepared the king. God has prepared the king with generosity and resources. The king is going to send me with an armed escort, with letters of official recognition and authority. God has been doing a work in my heart to prepare me. Oh, God, your hand has been upon me for good. And Nehemiah's testimony and recognition and affirmation of God at work in his life is such an encouragement and such a blessing and such a strengthening thing in him. It strengthens his own faith even as he realizes that God is at work. Can't see him, but I can sure see what he's doing. I can't see him, but I can see what he is doing. We sometimes sing the song, his purposes will ripen fast, unfolding every hour. The bud may have a bitter taste, but sweet will be the flower. Nehemiah saw God's purposes unfolding right before his eyes, and he's just overwhelmed to realize God's hand is upon us for good. I challenge us. Let's open our eyes to see what God is doing. Let's bow in prayer to pray for God to do it, to help us see his vision, and to acclaim and recognize what God is doing. Skip down again four verses. Verse 12. I had not told them yet what my God had put into my heart to do for Jerusalem. Nehemiah realized that God had been working in his heart, opening his eyes, giving him a vision, giving him ideas and a plan and personal involvement. God had been giving him not just the initial burden, but now what to do about the burden, how to be involved and participate. And God brought a change in Nehemiah's heart, and he is willing to do that. He was willing and eager to move with God to accomplish God's purpose in his life and in Jerusalem. That can be kind of scary. In prayer, we put ourselves in the capable hands of God. God may change you. What if God changes your mind? What if God changes your job? What if God changes you? Nehemiah would say, don't be afraid of it. It'll be for good. It's God's hand that's on me for good. Not for damage. Not to ruin me. Not to deprive me of my hopes and my future and my aspirations personally. But God's hand upon you for good. And so Nehemiah bought into God's vision. God's hand was different than Nehemiah's. He had to change his job. He had a secure government position over there. Retirement and all that was going to be taken care of. I mean, there's no worry there. He has a high position with the king. And he's willing to leave that behind. He's willing to go with God to a despised city and become a mason, building a stone wall. When we put ourselves into God's hand and surrender in humility to him, we acknowledge that his plan, the master plan, is worth following. Nehemiah says, yes, it's worth following. And it may change what your family is doing. It may change where you live. It may change your job, who you relate to. But you'll begin to see that These are all now new divine appointments that God is putting into your life and into your ministry and into your work and work world. And God is bringing to pass his plan in your heart. So Nehemiah would ask us, will you cooperate when God has a plan and wants you to be involved in it? It's a good plan. It's the good hand of God that's working it out. Skip down now to the fourth occurrence of God in this chapter, verse 18. Nehemiah just bluntly tells him, we're in trouble. It's bad news out there. I just saw it with my eyes last night. The walls are just a mess. There's just stones there. And they're going to have to be cleaned up and get the weeds out of the way and get the walls put back together. And it's a mess. We're in trouble. Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gates burned. He acknowledged the mess they were in, but it wasn't a hopeless mess because Nehemiah sees that God's hand is in this. And when God's hand is in it, it's not a mess that's hopeless. It's just a mess that needs some work. And so he told them of the hand of my God that had been upon me for good. And he explained to them his journey, his own personal journey, and where he'd come from, and what the king had said, and what God was doing in his heart. And now we're here together, and I just want to encourage you and say, God is in this, let's do it. And they said, yes, let's do it. His personal testimony, his confidence of what God had been doing in his heart, his enthusiasm was contagious. It was motivating. And so he inspired the people with a readiness to change. And they were willing to change. Yes, when God gets in stuff, it'll change. You want him to come in, be involved, and things just go on, same old ho-hum? No, when God gets involved, when his people get involved with his vision, things will change and people will change. And these people left their homes and jobs to come and work on the wall. We'll get to those in the next chapters. You remember here how that trustee of ours called for a work day? And we came out of the woodwork. We weren't electricians. We weren't skilled people to lay flooring. We weren't skilled at this or that, but we came and we worked together. 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 Time and again. It was so encouraging to know that the good hand of God was upon us. And with the leadership that was inspired by a dream or a vision that God put in his heart, we got in there. And we appreciate today and every day the building that we have in which to serve the Lord, in which to worship him. Are you aware in your heart? Do your eyes see what God is doing? What the good hand of God is doing among us? Among you? With you? I'd like for our sharing times to regularly be times of saying, God's hand was upon me this week and here's what I saw. Times of saying, God was involved in my life. I saw something that God had done. It was his doing, and I got to be a part of it. I got to see it or help along with it. That will be faith building among us. That will be unity building among us, even as it was for Nehemiah and the people here. Well, the fifth mention of God in this chapter is in verse 20, the last verse. Faced with ridicule and criticism, just the seeds of the opposition that's going to come, Nehemiah responded, the God of heaven will make us prosper. We are his servants. We will arise and build. He's not intimidated by criticism or opposition. His prayers have put him in the hand of God. He is secure there, and he's willing to now stand with God. And so he takes a stand with God, and he testifies to these godless opposing enemies, we belong to God, and he's going to see that we prosper, and he's going to see us through. Being in the hand of God and seeing God's hand at work and having his own faith and vision sharpened helps Nehemiah to see with clarity the difference between the good and the bad, the sincere and the scoffer, God's plan and provision versus human ingenuity or perspective. In the hand of God, Nehemiah had courage to stand with God. We can too. I just challenge us today to see and recognize the hand of God and to put ourselves in prayer into his care. So in summary, let me give five things that we can know about the hand of God. God's hand, that's where we begin. We began that in the other message. That's where Nehemiah began. That's where we ought to begin, with prayer. Seeking God's face. Place our lives into his hand. Second, God's hand works for good for those who are in his hand, not for ill. Don't fear what God may call you to do and say, oh, I'm going to have to give up this or that, or it's not going to be fun, or it's... Hey, if you're working with the divine architect of the universe and the one who said, I'm going to build my church and it'll never fail, if you're working with those people, you're going to succeed and you're going to have joy in doing it. It is a good work. Third, God's hand is powerful and active. God's hand makes a difference. God's hand shows in practical ways, and though we don't see him, and we noted with the children this morning that God, as a spirit, doesn't actually have hands. But this expression means that what God does and his work and his activity and his influence in people's lives makes a difference. God's hand is powerful and active. He changes people. He changed Nehemiah, didn't he? Is he changing you? He changed people's hearts, their motives and their goals, if they're willing and pliable in his hand. That's the challenge to us, isn't it? To be willing. God's hand inspires people to work and to work together. I love that word, don't you? They did this together. We did this here at Calvary together. It was not just me or you or any one of us. It wasn't just Josh. It was us together working and accomplishing God's work. Doesn't the Bible say we are workers together with God? It's a beautiful phrase. Finally, God's hand at work gives courage and hope and confidence. God's hand gives courage and hope and confidence. When we see God's hand at work and talk about it to others, it inspires them to stand with God too, and to buy into his plan also, and to accept his vision and his purpose with faith and with joy. I'm encouraged by Nehemiah's expression and testimony and story here. The invitation to us today is, put yourself in God's hand. This story is again a call to pray. A pray for his will to be accomplished in our lives, in this congregation, in your home and family. Pray. Pray for his will to be accomplished. Christ is building his church. That's just fact. Will you be a part of it? You want to be a part of a winning program? Whether we see it or not, whether we're a part of it or not, it's going to happen. Are you praying for that to happen among us? Are you willing to be changed? Willing to be changed. Nehemiah might say, maybe you're not yet ready to say, I'm willing to change or be changed, but maybe you can at least confess to God, I'm willing to be made willing. Can you begin there? And acknowledge to God your openness to participate in his plan and his purpose. Are you willing for God's vision to become your vision, to buy into it, to be motivated and enjoying the work with joy and with eagerness? Take that question with you this week in your prayer time, all week. Walk with God, in the hand of God. Jonathan has a song for us to sing together.